I was driving across the country for a kind of hectic trip. I had to get some things done for work at an office way up in Maine, and decided that while I was there already on the road trip, that I'd visit some of my friends and family on the East Coast. During my fourth day of driving, I was spending most of that day going through Pennsylvania. There were a lot of cool towns, but most of the drive was through nothing. And to get where I was going, it was taking me on a lot of side routes, which were these long and empty one-lane highways. As it was getting late, rain started coming down, and my fuel was running low. I hadn't passed any gas stations in a while, so I figured there had to be one soon. But again, this road wasn't really going through any towns. I continued through the rain for another 30 minutes, and barely through the fog, I saw a sign for a gas station. And a couple moments later, it showed up ahead of me. It was off the side of the road, nestled in the trees, and was really small. It only had two pumps and a tiny concession building behind it. Having no other choice, I pulled in and parked, getting out and opening up my gas tank. When I pulled the pump off and tried to insert my card though, it didn't work. I wiped the dusty screen and tried to see what it was saying, but it didn't say anything. It wasn't even on. I then went over to the only other pump, and it was also off. Frustrated, I looked around. With it raining and being well past sunset, it was really hard to make anything out. Sure, the place looked old and outdated, but so did a lot of other gas stations. After a closer look though, I noticed a small light inside the concession building. Hoping it was a worker that could help me, I stepped out from under the overhang covering the pumps and ran up to the door. Moisture was covering the entire glass door, so I couldn't see inside. All I could see was the light reflecting through the glass. I grabbed the handle and it screeched open. When I stepped inside, I immediately knew something was wrong. The store shelves were empty, and some even knocked over, and the place just looked like it was destroyed. The light was coming from somewhere in the back though, and was now clearly some sort of lamp or something. Definitely not a regular store light. I was only in there for a few seconds, and after seeing all of that, I quickly stepped back outside. I didn't know what was going on in there, but I knew it couldn't be anything good, and definitely not helpful for my situation. As I backed out of the store and into the rain, I turned around toward my car, but a person was standing next to it. They were completely drenched in water and were just looking around my car and into the windows.
"Hey, what are you doing?"
I yelled as I quickly made my way up to them. They shot a look at me, then moved their eyes behind me. I turned back to look at the building. The front door was opened, and a man came out into the rain. He had long black hair and a sickly look. He spent no time assessing the situation and instantly started running at me. The other person by my car just backed away as I got inside, but the man running didn't slow down. He came right up to my door and tried opening it, and as I pulled away, a loud metallic scrape vibrated through the car. I sped out of there and back onto the road, making it another half hour before my car ran out of gas. Luckily, I had cell service in the area and was able to get help. While I waited though, I looked at the outside of my car and saw a huge line going across the door. It looked like the man had run a knife along it when I drove away. Police informed me later that night that the gas station I was at was not in service for at least a decade. Other than that though, Nothing else came of it. And what would have happened if I didn't get out in time is left to nothing but theories. I live in the Midwest, and there happens to be a lot of abandoned places near me. I was in my last year of high school at the time, and my friends and I would often go to these creepy places for fun. It was a pretty normal thing that kids around here did. This was on Memorial Day weekend, which meant we had 3 days off of school, and with the year coming to a close, we decided to go explore a place that we'd been wanting to go to for a while. It was a ghost town called Cairo, which isn't technically a full ghost town because a small portion is still lived in. From what I know, it was built up in the late 1800s, and due to flooding and racial conflicts, it slowly lost its population. For almost 50 years, most of the town has been completely empty and untouched, left to just decay. Hearing about this, and hearing stories from other people who had been there, we were all really invested in seeing it for ourselves. On Sunday, around 6, my friend Tristan picked me and Ryan up, then we drove 2 hours south to Cairo. Most of the drive was through huge farmlands and fields with not many towns or cities nearby. When we got onto the road going through Cairo, it was probably the most eerie feeling I'd ever gotten. There were faint lights far down the road, coming from what looked like a few residents' houses, but everything between that was pitch black and completely abandoned. We parked on the side next to some old brick building that said liquor on it, then got out of the car. We all stood there for a minute, not really saying anything, and just listening. The wind was blowing around, making the metal and wood creak all throughout the buildings, but other than that, it was absolutely silent. Ryan led the way, walking down the road as we looked around. On the left side of the road were small wooden homes, swallowed by vines and bushes. And on the right side was a line of old shops. As we got toward the middle, one of them stood out to us. There was a sign sticking out from the brick that said Gem. It looked like it was an old theater, even having a ticket booth next to the entrance. We all agreed to check it out, so we pulled out our flashlights and entered through one of the windows. It was obviously really dark inside, and our flashlights were pretty terrible, to be honest, lighting up only a couple feet in the direction we pointed them in. The main room was really dusty and had an awful odor to it, like rotting wood or mold. The floor was covered in debris as well, but as we looked around, Ryan suddenly told us to stop. Tristan and I immediately stopped moving and talking and just stared at Ryan. He looked like he had heard something, so we all stood in silence and listened for any noises. After a minute, Ryan broke the silence and said he swore he heard something above us. He said it was like a single footstep, but Tristan and I didn't hear it and thought it was probably just the building creaking. We looked around some more before going through the only other doorway, which led up some stairs to a second floor. This floor was actually where all the seats were at. There were about 50 chairs leading up to a balcony where the stage was on the floor below. We started walking in, going down the row of steps through the chairs, when a small creak from behind us made us all turn around. In the corner, a man was standing between the wall and one of the chairs. He looked completely disheveled and homeless, and he was staring right at us while holding up one of his arms. In his hand was a small revolver, and he was pointing it directly at me. It was still silent in the building, to the point where I could literally hear my heart beating through my body, before Tristan ran back down the stairs, leaving just me and Ryan. We tried to stay calm and told him we were just going to leave, but the man didn't speak or move. So we carefully started walking back to the stairs, and as soon as we were out of sight, we booked it out of the theater and back to the car. We drove away and spent the better part of an hour driving in silence as we all soaked in what happened. My guess is that the man we saw used to live in the community, but as it fell apart, he probably got caught up in the mess and was forced to hide and live in one of the abandoned buildings. There were a lot of ways that situation could have ended, and all of us getting out unharmed was unlikely. And we haven't tested our luck at any other places since then. This was about 10 months ago now. I was spending a few days with my best friend from college in his hometown. I'll call him Chris for privacy. It was a really small town from what I was used to, but Chris was showing me around and we went to the bars and just hung out and had a good time. On my last night there, he mentioned a place he'd been wanting to explore for a while, but hadn't had anyone to go with. It was some abandoned house or town he knew of, a few miles out in the woods. We used to go exploring and backpacking all the time in college, so it sounded like a pretty cool idea. Only 30 minutes after hearing about it, we were already trekking through a path in the woods. We still had some sunlight left, but we brought headlamps just in case. About 20 minutes of walking, the trail ended and we had to follow a very faint footpath through the trees. It went on for another hour before we made it. We could see a house out in the distance, and as we got closer, we could see several more behind it. It wasn't what either of us expected, though. The houses didn't really look that old. They looked weathered and heavily damaged, but had modern siding and stuff like that that made them look kind of like any other house. There was even a tiny gravel road leading from each of the homes. It looked like maybe they were trying to build a community, and something went wrong, causing them to abandon it. Other people had been there before us, though, evident by the graffiti on the sides of the houses. Chris and I went up to the first house, looking through the open doorway. There were weeds growing through the floorboards, but it was otherwise empty. Before we stepped in, though, a loud slamming sound echoed through the woods. Both of us jumped and stared down the gravel road that we thought it came from. After that sound, though, it was quiet. We had no idea what it was, but after seeing nothing, we went inside the house. There wasn't too much to look at, but what made it so interesting was trying to figure out why anyone would abandon it. The house looked like it would have been nice before it was left behind. After walking around the first floor, we went upstairs to the second. Oddly, it got way darker upstairs, like no windows were letting in any light. The hallway was short, with only two doors and what looked like an attic in the ceiling. We went up to the first door and opened it, seeing another empty room. But we were quickly interrupted by hearing something downstairs. There were shuffling footsteps coming through the grass and up to the house we were in. We stayed quiet, but we were sure that whoever they were had probably seen us outside. But why would they try to approach us? They walked up to the front doorway, then stopped just before they entered.
"Hello?"
We didn't respond.
I just want to talk. No harm at all.
He sounded older, and almost like he was missing teeth or something, stumbling a bit over his words. After that, though, there was a whole minute of silence. He didn't say anything else, but we didn't hear him leave either. We waited another few minutes, still not hearing anything, before Chris quietly went down the staircase and looked over at the front door. He turned and looked back at me with a pale face.
There's nobody there.
I quickly went to see for myself, but he wasn't lying. He was nowhere in the doorway. We carefully made our way down and over to the doorway. Looking out, there was one line of footprints in the grass coming from where the other houses were, but no footprints leaving. Both of us figured it out at the same time and bolted for the trees, knowing the guy must have been hiding inside the house somehow. We got out of the woods as fast as we could and went back to his place. Who that guy was and why he wanted to talk to us, we don't know. I'm sure if he'd found us, though, we probably wouldn't be here.
Before I moved to Indiana with my girlfriend, I lived with my dad on a ranch in the middle of nowhere in a small town called Hartville in Wyoming. Seriously, the town had maybe 50 people in it total. It was really that small. A measly 25% of the population alone was probably my own family. I have three brothers, one sister, and, well, of course, my dad. My mom passed away from heart disease when I was young, and it really sucked. It really sucks not having her around, as she truly made everything in my life so much better, in all of our lives. I had some aunts and uncles, and one cousin as well that lived near us. I was going to miss them all, but it was time for me to live my own life. After all, I was 20 years old, and I had dreams of the city life, and I always wanted to be a veterinarian. My girlfriend at the time, now wife, and I are very close, and we have been since we met. What started out as a long-distance relationship quickly turned into an 8-year marriage so far and still going strong. The first few weeks in Indiana was amazing. Apart from missing my family back home, it really felt like everything was coming together, and I was unbelievably happy to say the least. My wife recently just moved into her own house, and I moved in with her. She also kind of lived in the country, but barely. It was nowhere near as desolated as my old house was in Wyoming. We're only 5 minutes from the nearest city in Indiana, if that. In Wyoming, my family and I were literally at least 30 minutes away from any store at all. Now, with all the good things that were going on in my life, there was a bit of a problem. You see, the house in Indiana had a long history of sketchy and weirdly horrific horrors and rumors about it. Some of them were true and not just rumors, but some of them were just flat out fake as hell, and I knew they weren't true. However, before Leslie, my wife, moved into the house, it had been broken into at least 3 or 4 times, all in the time span of 20 years. We only knew about this because of our neighbors, and we definitely believed them. We had no reason not to. Plus, besides that, Leslie told me about how she would see this guy on the property before I moved in, at least 3 different times that she was sure of. She had no idea who the guy was, though. He only came around during the day. Every time he showed up, apparently, he would stare from the end of the road and then slowly make his way up to the house and up to the window in the kitchen or the dining room and glare inside the house. Every time this happened, Leslie called the police, but they never caught him. He would always be gone by the time the cops made it there. Most of the people who live in rural areas are nice and really sweet old people, or just middle-aged parents with a family. But every once in a while, you run into a real whack job. The country is a good place to lay low, and unfortunately, there definitely is a place for everybody. A lot of lowlifes, aka sex offenders or druggies, will live out there to try and stay low-key and under the radar from the police, or just people in general. I, of course, was very concerned about this guy, and Leslie was deeply terrified of him, understandably. I obviously wasn't scared, but definitely worried. You never know what someone is capable of. Anyways, we would be okay because I had a pump-action shotgun along with a .45 handgun and a revolver. And even at that, I had my fair share collection of knives and daggers. I reassured Leslie that everything was going to be okay. Well, one night around 10:30, give or take, we were hanging out in the living room watching a movie and we were both half asleep. Shockingly, we both wake up to a knock on our front door. It was extremely loud and completely out of the blue, so it jump-scared the living heck out of us. I jumped up and ran to our room and I grabbed my shotgun out of the closet before anything, and I was about ready to lose my cool. I looked out of the blinds first to make sure it was someone we didn't know. We both got a good look at the man, and Leslie confirmed it was the same stranger who had been showing up to the house unannounced time and time again. He hadn't seen either of us yet at this point. I opened the door and I prepared for the worst. But just like that, he was gone. I stepped outside and I swore I saw something out of the corner of my eye. I told Leslie to go back inside and grab the .45 and to sit in our room on the bed and wait for me. I looked all around for the man and I was yelling at him and telling him to show himself. That's when it hit me. I looked over to my left and I saw that our shed that we don't even use, the side door was wide open. I ran over to the shed and I started hearing noises inside, almost like somebody was moving stuff around. The light was off and I couldn't see a thing. I didn't say anything because I didn't want him to know I was right there. I was going to wait for him to come out, but something got a hold of me inside and I couldn't hold back. I was so pissed off that he was scaring Leslie and him disturbing our night, I was genuinely infuriated. I wasn't going to let him get away with this, even if my life depended on it. I slowly but surely made my way to the door, and I was almost inside now. I took one more step, and now I was directly in the door frame, with my other leg behind me still touching the grass outside. I looked inside, and the noise stopped. He must have heard me or noticed me somehow. I went to turn on the light, but of course the light bulb was out, because it wasn't turning on. That's when things went from horrible to much, much worse. Out of nowhere, I heard the man start running towards me and I stepped back and I couldn't believe it, but I accidentally pulled the trigger. I stood still in disbelief as I couldn't believe what I just did. I didn't hit him, but I'm saying it didn't even seem to scare him. He continued running at me and I hadn't pumped the shotgun yet after shooting it. At this point, I was probably 10 feet away from the shed and there he was. We were staring right at each other. I pointed the gun at him and I told him to leave or I was going to kill him.
Do it then. You won't kill me. You're a coward.
Then he proceeded to call me every name in the book. Then that's when the police sirens came about in the mere distance, and he knew he was done for. I looked at him with a deceiving smile and I dropped my shotgun as he tried to run away. I tackled him to the ground and I put him in a full Nelson and I held him there until the cops arrived on scene and I let them do their thing. I'm glad Leslie called the police. I was hoping that's what she was doing because I didn't tell her to. Everything happened so fast and I was worried she wasn't going to call them, considering the last three times they showed up 30 minutes late each time. Anyways, we're worried that he's going to come back. We have a restraining order on him, but obviously, there's really nothing stopping him from coming back if he really wanted to. When he gets out of jail, that is. Or maybe he already is out of jail, I don't know. All I know is that if he does come back, his ass is mine, and next time I won't be so nice. Family comes first, and I won't let anything get in the way of that. Leslie and I are trying to move, but it's a lot easier said than done. She spent just about all of her savings on the down payment of this place, so we're going to have to hang tight for a while.
This is a story of my best friend and what her life is like with the stalker. This will be the abridged version, but still will be long. She knew of him through a mutual friend, and he lived in Delaware. We lived in Tennessee. He came to visit his friend, met her once, then decided to move here. After he had lived here for 6 months, they began dating. 3 months into them dating, he admitted he moved here because he wanted to be closer to her, even though they weren't romantically involved at the time. Before they had ever dated, he asked her what she wanted for her birthday. She said that she liked stars, so just something with stars on it. And he literally bought her a star in the sky and named it Terra. It was also accompanied with a very intense and creepy love letter. She didn't see it as a warning sign, and she liked the attention. I told her that it was overboard and creepy. The first week of them dating, he began going through her phone and purse at every opportunity. She was furious about this and told them her phone is private. She said he should only snoop if he has a good reason to do so, not just because he wants to keep tabs on who she texts. She puts a lock on her phone, but it doesn't take long for him to figure out the lock code. He didn't admit to going through her phone again, but she knew he was, because he would always seem to bring up a person that may have texted her that day, or the subject that was spoken of. Some phone numbers of her closest guy friends had been changed in her phone as well. He wouldn't let her go anywhere without him. He would make plans with her for every single day of the week, and then make her promise to follow through with the plans, even though they lived together. If she ever went back on the plans because something else came up that she wanted to do, he would throw a bit of a fit and say she's a liar because she didn't keep her promise. It was things like she had promised to eat dinner at home with him, small things. He would often react violently. She became increasingly agitated with his controlling and smothering behavior and told him that she wanted to go have girl time with me, that she needs some breathing space for a night. He made her promise to let him come if we hung out with other people. About an hour before she was coming to meet me, I got a phone call from a friend that had moved across the country. He was in town and wanted to see me. I told him that I would have a friend with me that night, but we'd swing by his house for about an hour if she was okay with it. I asked Tara if she's cool with it, and she says of course. A few minutes later, I got a text from him asking if he could come because of the promise that Tara had made to him. I said, "I'm sorry, but I don't think it's acceptable. This is a friend that I haven't seen in several years, and I'm already taking one person over to his mom's house that he doesn't know. It would be rude to bring another. And we're only staying there for about an hour anyways." A few minutes after, Tara texts and says she's walking out her door. She never makes it to my house. I called and texted but couldn't get to her. I finally got one text from her that just said, "Help." I immediately drove to her apartment where I found her on her balcony. He had stolen her phone and locked her on her balcony so she couldn't leave. They broke up for a while, and I guess out of being lonely, she got back with him. One night, he bursted through my front door unannounced because he hadn't talked to Tara in 30 minutes. She went to dinner with a family friend, and he was following her and spying on her. Her phone had died, and he panicked when he lost track of her. He freaked out in my living room, and I also found out that he had saved the numbers of all the guys she had in her phone. I told him he was not allowed to be near me again, even if Tara was with him. He seemed to act normal for a while until Tara became pregnant. He was ecstatic, and she was scared. After about a week, she started getting excited about being a parent. That was until she started adding some things up. Her birth control had mysteriously vanished not long before she got pregnant. He was giving her vitamins every day and watching her take them. He said she needed to take them because she's anemic. When she looked up the pills, they were for fertility. She also remembered a few times when he said he was wearing a condom, and she didn't think it felt like one was there. He had been trying to get her pregnant. She understandably chose to not keep the baby after finding this out, and she was terrified of him after this. He would have used that baby as a way to get to Tara. It would have meant nothing more to him. They split again. He still lived in their apartment after they split, and she would drop by here and there to get some of her stuff. He seemed to be handling things okay until Thanksgiving. He threw her all over the apartment when she stopped by for stuff. That night, he said he was going to spend the night out of town in Nashville, that he needed Tara to stay there and watch his puppy. She made sure it had food and water, but didn't want to be there in case he came back. He did. At 1 a.m., she gets dozens of phone calls from him. He was never in Nashville. He was just trying to get her alone and flipped his shit when she wasn't there. He sent her 115 texts that all said, "Respond to me." He began driving by her work and house all the time. He would call and text her incessantly. He told her that he isn't promising his sanity or her safety, and that he would kill her. He started taking her mail even. I told her that I would go get her mail for her, but he said he wouldn't give it to me. He'd only give it to her if she came in person. He began threatening me and saying that it was my fault. Yes, I had encouraged her to get away from him. He was insane, and everyone was scared for her. She was living at my house because he didn't know where I lived at the time. I finally decided to treat him like a kid, and I called his mother in Delaware. I told her of his behavior and threats and asked if she could help him. He ended up moving back to Delaware, but would still call and text Tara all the time. He also made sure to bash her to every person she knew. He would come back to town often, and he would go everywhere he knew she would go. He would go places where her friends worked. He would drive by her work, He would send her gifts, and sometimes she'd see him waiting outside of places she was at. It finally stopped, though. She had a year of silence from him, and she had even moved to a different state with the guy she was dating. Her and her new boyfriend split, and she moved back home to Tennessee and started working at a hotel. He once came into her hotel and bought a room for the night. The next morning, he checked out and drove back to Delaware. He drove 12 hours to stay at her hotel for one night, and then turned around and went back. He sent her a text a few months ago saying he's moving back here. For several years, she was constantly on edge. She gets nervous if she sees a car like his, and she has a genuine fear that he will hurt her if he gets the opportunity. She thinks he'll kill her one day, and I'm also afraid of that as well. She has numerous police reports over this guy, and I hate seeing how he's damaged her, and she's afraid to get close to another guy. She doesn't want kids now, and she's always nervous. We still use the buddy system. She doesn't go anywhere at all by herself. It only takes one moment of her being alone for him to get her.